Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 3rd, 2017. Japan donates millions of dollars for rebuilding institutions in South Sudan.
The immense need of humanitarian assistance, such as food distribution, nutritional care, health care services, are there. But we are also trying to assist institutionally and also in terms of economic livelihoods of the citizens.
And a South Sudanese politician says President Salva Kiir should not be in charge of the proposed national dialogue.
If you call for a dialogue as a leader, it means that law and order is not there. There is a chaos in the country. So you want to bring the people together. Then it means that you cannot be the one to sit on that table to tell us what.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Japanese government is providing more than $22 million for humanitarian assistance and for rebuilding government institutions destroyed by deadly violence that surged in July. An official from the Japanese embassy in Juba says his government will work with humanitarian agencies to implement development projects and provide aid to hundreds of thousands of internally displaced persons in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
The $22.4 million donation was announced yesterday at the Japanese embassy in Juba. Koji Ito, who runs cooperation and economic affairs at the embassy, says the money should provide food aid and health care for the displaced.
The immense need of humanitarian assistance, such as food distribution, nutritional care, health care services, are there. But we are also trying to assist institutionally and also in terms of economic livelihoods of the citizens.
Ito says Japan will also help with capacity building.
For example, projects for establishing state revenue authority, which is going to help the revenue collection of each of the states so that people in the region will have a government that is reliable to deliver public service. We also have e-visa application to South Sudan's migrants to South Sudan so that the system is going to be upgraded and can be better monitored. We also have peace dialogue among the women groups, which is also in line with the national dialogue announcement that the president made in December.
Ito says the money will also help foster peace dialogue among women's groups, which he says is in line with the national dialogue President Salva Kiir announced in December. And some of the money will facilitate the work of ceasefire monitors in South Sudan. Ito says years of violence has destroyed much of South Sudan. He says it is not unlike what happened to Japan when it saw its infrastructure and institutions destroyed during World War II. He says his government can share with South Sudan its experience of post-war reconstruction.
Japan rebuilt itself from the post-war rubbles, and we have a strong emotional attachment to the situation of South Sudan, especially with the presence of the peacekeepers. We would like to accompany the peace-building efforts with concrete actions of humanitarian and reconstruction effort.
Like South Sudan, Japan also needed the help of its partners to rebuild after the war.
Japan did not come up by itself. We had immense help from international partners, and we, in collaboration with these generous donors, people in Japan started to realize that it is their time to rebuild their livelihoods. And I believe that this batch of funds, however little, would be utilized to the maximum extent so that South Sudanese people will restore their life.
A Juba resident who did not want to be identified for fear of repercussions says while Japan's donation is a noble gesture, he is skeptical that the South Sudan government will use it for the right purposes.
That was not the first time that money was donated to South Sudan, but still up to now there was no improvement which was met by the government. I'm afraid they're wasting money for no reason, especially some of the ministers, they used to sleep in these big hotels, and with they normally waste a lot of the government resources, and the government should have to use this money for improving the infrastructures and then social services for citizens of South Sudan.
Another Juba resident, John Lowe, says the donation by Japan's government should be used to help the tens of thousands of IDPs, including those in his home county of Kejukeji.
Our parents are now in refugees. This money is supposed to be taken there to help them, and country will be in peace. With that peace, we'll find that people are running from their country. And that money actually to be able to develop hospitals, schools. Actually, let me give, for example, in Kejukeji. Kejukejians right now, they are leaving the place due to what insecurity. And if government put more effort into it, I think that they can solve the issue.
Japan also gave $13 million to assist South Sudanese refugees in Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya. The Japanese embassy in Juba has given $189 million to South Sudan since the fighting erupted in December 2013. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
A former advisor to President Salva Kiir says South Sudanese leaders are responsible for the more than 3 years of crisis in the country. Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior says the 2015 peace agreement was the only hope left for South Sudanese, but was never implemented. She says actors within the international communities are to blame for proposing what she calls unrealistic solutions to the country's conflict.
We violated the agreement immediately after the formation of government of national unity. We have not apologized to the people of Southern Sudan for what had happened. 70 days immediately after the swearing in of Dr. Riek, 70 days, and everything fell apart. So there's nothing which is happening.
The former U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan in South Sudan, Ambassador Donald Booth, made a statement during a hearing that he thinks it's not wise for Dr. Riek Machar to return to South Sudan. Do you agree with him?
If Ambassador Donald Booth is saying this, what is his alternative to that? Because for me, what I see, if Dr. Riek is not going to South Sudan, it does not stop the crisis in South Sudan. So what is his alternative? This is what he did not provide to the people of South Sudan. I met him myself, and I told him, I said that, Ambassador, you listen to the voice of reasoning, the voice of people of South Sudan. What are they really experiencing in the country? Not you, because you come here for some hours and go back to America. If they say that Dr. Riek does not come, why are they leaving President Salva there? To do what? In order for us to have a peaceful transition, we want the two leaders to be there to prepare and pave the way for the election. Otherwise, nobody else can come and tell us today that, oh, Dr. Riek should not be here, and so will be here.
The whole nation is looking at you for a solution. They call you the mother of the nation. Given that you are not happy with all the proposals that are on the table, what is the end of this? What is the end game?
What are the proposals? There's no any proposal that I'm seeing on the table except the dialogue President Salva is presenting. We have agreed that dialogue is okay. But the definition of dialogue has not been defined properly by the president. Because if you call for a dialogue as a leader, it means that law and order is not there. There is a chaos in the country. So you want to bring the people together. Then it means that you cannot be the one to sit on that table to tell us what. I'm not disagreeing with anything. I'm saying that dialogue is okay, but what is the content? So President Salva, as somebody who has taken over from Dr. John, should be the one to know better what is good for the people of South Sudan, not him who will be hurting the people of South Sudan. If he say dialogue, he should consult first. If that idea is in his mind, he should consult. With those of IO, if they are afraid to come to Juba or other neighboring countries, they should look for somebody somewhere else where they can consult with them, and then we come to Juba. Because if you talk about dialogue, you cannot do it in another country, but you have to do it in Juba, in our country. That's where everybody will have a chance. But at the same time, we need to give a chance to the regional protection forces to come and level the ground, to give the protection so that people talk freely. 64 tribes are at each other's throats. How do we bring them together? I agree with the dialogue, but not the content.
That's Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, former advisor to President Salva Kiir. Nyandeng is the widow of South Sudan's founding father, late Dr. John Garang Dimabior. She was speaking to me yesterday here in our studio in Washington. Morocco's King Mohammed VI says his country will fund a study to relocate South Sudan's capital from Juba to Ramchel. Under the agreement the king signed with President Salva Kiir in Juba yesterday, Morocco will give South Sudan $5 million US dollars for the feasibility study. The proposal to relocate the capital has been on and off ever since South Sudan gained its independence in 2011, but has never come to completion. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Morocco's Interior Minister Mohamed Hassan says his country is ready to support many development projects in South Sudan, including the construction of the city of Ramchel in the former Lake State. Hassan spoke in Arabic at Presidential Palace in Juba on Wednesday evening before President Kiir and King Mohammed signed the agreement for constructing Ramchel.
The Moroccan government expresses its readiness and full support to achieve the full construction of the new city. But before that, we need to complete the feasibility studies and assemble the technical and financial budgeting needs. And we can support it at the limit of $5 million.
Hassan says the feasibility studies will look into the environmental, economic, and financial considerations for building Ramchel. He did not say when the project will start. 8 other cooperation agreements were signed between the two countries, covering education, healthcare, agriculture, and mining. Hassan says the king will continue to support the South Sudan government in its quest for peace and development.
The Kingdom of Morocco will follow up with South Sudan during the implementation of the construction, and they will also seek technical and financial support to fund other projects in the country.
South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro says the agreement signed by President Kiir and King Mohammed opened a new era of cooperation between Morocco and South Sudan, which include humanitarian development projects.
The two heads of state officially launched the medical surgical field hospital deployed in Juba by the Royal Armed Forces to deliver medical services to the population.
Lomuro says the South Sudan government is grateful for Morocco's help. Reading from the joint communique, he says President Kiir also appreciates King Mohammed's work towards African unity.
President General Salva Kiir Mayardit commended the vision of His Majesty the King Mohammed VI for strengthening inter-African and South-South cooperation, as well as His Majesty's efforts for the preservation of peace, stability, and for the promotion of the continent's prosperity.
This is the King Mohammed's first visit to South Sudan since the country declared its independence. It comes on the heels of Morocco's readmission into the African Union, which took place earlier this week during the AU summit in Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, musicians hold a concert for hope in Uganda for refugees. Hear the music and the message when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you smile?
What makes me to smile is that whenever I am happy, I must express my feeling in terms of smiling.
When I see my friend is happy, and if he or she doesn't have any problem, I always do feel happy, and I will smile. It is also an answer for him to know that I'm happy because of his or her situation.
What makes me smile is, when there's something so funny, when there's some funny things happening, amused you, actually, you need to smile.
Something funny. When I hear something funny, yeah, that's it. I'm just a joyful person, and mostly what makes me smile is if what I am doing has given me an achievement.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. We now turn to Malawi, where the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, is appealing for $22 million in emergency aid for children affected by El Nino. The agency estimates that 94% of children aged between 6 to 24 months in Malawi do not have the minimum acceptable diet. That's largely because of food shortages, which have affected nearly half of the population. Andrew Brown is chief communication at UNICEF Malawi. He told reporter Lamek Masina the funds will be used to provide children with nutrition and health services.
This is part of a global appeal for $3.3 billion to cover our needs for children affected by natural disasters and conflict. Within this, there's a portion for Southern Africa, which is for countries affected by, first of all, El Nino and then La Nina, which is coming. In Malawi, we're asking for $22 million.
What's the extent of the problem in Malawi?
Well, at the moment, there are close to 1 million children affected by hunger in Malawi. We've seen over the last 2 years droughts, we've seen harvest failing. So a lot of families are now dependent on food aid. Although children are getting food, they're not getting the balanced diet that they need in order to survive and thrive.
How soon do you need the funds you are requesting here in this appeal?
We have immediate needs. So we have a 22 million funding gap right now. So we're appealing for the money now. I mean, this is a long-running situation, so the money will be welcome whenever we get it. But the needs are urgent and the needs are right now.
What will the funds be used for? Do you have a specific program where you will maybe invest the funds in?
Yes, so we have a program. The main focus of our program is treating malnutrition. Actually, at the moment, our latest statistics indicate that 94% of children aged 6 to 24 months are not getting the minimum acceptable diet, which is a measure of diversity of food. We also know that around 45% of households have inadequate food consumption, so they don't have enough to eat.
What interventions are you currently doing in order to solve some of these malnutrition problems?
We currently have a mass screening program that we're running throughout Malawi. We have so far reached over 1 million children, and this involves going door to door through communities to look for children who are suffering from malnutrition. We can, for instance, measure the circumference of the arm. And by taking account of the child's age, we can see if they're suffering from malnutrition. If they are, we then have a program through health centres where children are assessed by a doctor. They are then prescribed, if they need it, ready-to-use therapeutic food. So this is, it's a paste. It's a little bit like peanut butter, but it's highly nutritious. The child gets a supply of that, and then they are monitored until their weight comes back up to a healthy weight. The parents would also be given counselling on how to ensure a balanced diet for the child.
How many have you screened?
So we've already screened over 1 million children throughout Malawi. We've also treated over 50,000. So of that 1 million, 50,000 children were identified as suffering from acute malnutrition. But we've estimated there's another 64,000 children that we need to treat this year.
That's Andrew Brown, Chief of Communication at UNICEF Malawi. He was speaking to Lamek Masina in Blantyre. While European countries try to stop the flow of sub-Saharan African migrants from Libya, a medical aid group warns that conditions for migrants in Libya are dangerous and unhealthy. Libya is the main departure point for those trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea. However, many are physically and sexually abused before smugglers put them in unseaworthy vessels. Thousands have died in both accidents. Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, is providing medical care for migrants, refugees and asylum seekers being detained in and around Tripoli. MSF Central Director Ariane Heikenkamp has just returned from the Libyan capital. From Amsterdam, he told viewers Joe DiCapua that the political turmoil in Libya is making conditions worse.
The situation, the political and security situation in Libya is terribly complicated. We have three governments that are officially in place, competing with one another, and even in Tripoli, which is where I was for 3 days, where one government basically holds sway. The city is basically divided in areas that are controlled by different militias that have their own weapons and their own agendas. And so we're talking about a very fragmented and very unstable and fragile political and security situation. These militias are also the ones that basically are controlling the detention centers and are making money out of it by not treating these people very nicely. In fact, they very often abuse and actually don't give them anything that we would like to think that people are deserving of.
How do these migrants and refugees and asylum seekers wind up in the detention centers in the first place?
Well, officially, they shouldn't be in the country if they don't have any paperwork. Of course, Libya has always been a place where migrants have gone to in order to be able to do work that wasn't done by the Libyans themselves. And so a part of the migrants that I've seen in detention centers are just basically people that have lived there for years and have been picked off the street and have been shoved into these detention centers. Some are people that have been picked up from border areas or from the airport that didn't have any papers and that have been shoved into detention centers. And then there's a final category of people that have been intercepted in front of the coast of Libya that have been returned and are now re-interned in these detention centers.
Now, I know MSF is working in those detention centers, and you touched on it earlier. Could you more in-depth describe the conditions that they face there?
I visited two out of the seven in which we work, and these are not centers in any normal sense of the word. I mean, they're warehouses, very often in an industrial sort of area. People are crammed into a very limited space without any light and without much air, with no access to toilets, with little water, and very often not water that is suitable for drinking, and very little food. I've talked to guys that have been there, people that have been there for months, you know, 8 months maximum, I heard. And people don't have a clue whenever they will be let out, on what conditions and for what reason they would be able to earn their freedom back again. And then there was one instance where a guy was talking to me about some of the abuse that they were getting, and he was doing so in hushed tones. And then at some point he just froze and he looked over my shoulder and there was a guard standing there, and clearly he was very anxious and scared.
We've had reports that women and girls have been sexually abused as well. Have you received those reports too?
No, we haven't received those reports through our work in detention centers. We are aware of the reports being made, but we cannot confirm it, partially because it's very difficult in order to be able to get sensitive information in working in these detention centers, because we're doing so under the glare of the people who control the center itself and with their acceptance. And people are not very often comfortable to tell us what is happening in those detention centers.
So what message would MSF like to tell European leaders about the migrants, refugees, and asylum seekers in Libya?
It is abundantly clear from my visit and from our experience over there that Libya is not part of the solution. What happens over there is part of the problem. And so therefore, it is either completely naive or utterly cynical for the European leaders to pretend that they can stop people from leaving Libya and then return them and thereby solve the problem.
Ariane Heikenkamp is Central Director for Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF. She spoke to viewers Joe DiCapua from Amsterdam. A South Sudanese singer says he wants to use his music to give fellow South Sudanese refugees living in Uganda hope for the future. Moses Lupai, who fled violence in Yei River State last year, organized a concert at Swinga Refugee Settlement in Uganda's Yumbe District. Tito Justin attended last weekend's concert in Uganda along with thousands of South Sudanese refugees.
Lupai Moses entertains thousands of refugees with the song Yesu Masia at the Swinga Refugee Settlement in Yumbe District during Friday's free concert. Mawa Alex Valentino, who was displaced from Yei River State, Lanya County last year, was among the many South Sudanese attending the Restoration of Hope concert. Alex says it was appropriately named because refugees like himself need to hold on to the hope that one day life will once again be peaceful in South Sudan.
In fact, I'm so much happy with the program that you guys have brought for us. I want to tell the people of South Sudan, you must have that love for your country, and we hope that we'll be in our country once again.
Alex urged the fellow refugees to live together peacefully in exile and pray for peace to prevail in their home country. Another refugee from Yei, Franco Emmanuel, was one of the entertainers at the concert. Emmanuel says the concert is all about fostering peace.
We need to love one another. We need to stay in unity. And we have to surrender all those that we have left behind, you know. What is hurting us more here is that we still have the flash of those things that we have left behind. But now, here we have to forget them. We have to be free so that we will also we'll push ahead with life.
Local Ugandan comedian Feni Patrick, also known as Man Pato, performed at the concert. Patrick also urged the refugees not to lose hope.
What I can say is that life is life. What has happened has happened. You're here with us in Uganda. What I'm telling you is that be free. One time, you'll be okay. Because I know you've lost a lot of people, but with God, everything is possible. We don't do things on our own. You know, it is all about God's making.
Lopai Moses says he uses his music to pass on the messages that the government's national dialogue is aimed at reconciling South Sudanese so that lasting peace can be achieved across the country.
We know that our people are traumatized due to the conflicts in the country. You know, they lost their livelihood, and their life is very hard. Then psychologically, they are traumatized and tortured. You can see that you live and you sleep in a very powerful, good house in South Sudan. Now you are sleeping under a tent. So it is a very, very unfortunate, but we need to restore hope for our people.
The singer says he will organize a similar concert in the Bidibidi Refugee Settlement Center in Yumbe District later this month. Moses is calling on South Sudan's warring parties to tour the Ugandan camps hosting refugees to see up close the conditions under which refugees live.
If we can invite the senior government officials and the opposition senior officials to come and attend that show, even if they will not give a word, but we need to take them through the camp, let them see the people of South Sudan, let them see how the people are suffering, the people that brought the new country, the people that should be a pride to the government, how they are suffering.
More than a half million South Sudanese are living as refugees in camps across neighboring Uganda. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin, in Arua, Uganda.
That's our show for this Thursday. Let's hear more from musician Moses Lopai with the song "Why Do You Choose War?"
Why do we choose war? Destruction. War is all about death. War is all about looting. War is all about rape. War is all about sorrows. Why did you choose war? Instead of peace.
We've been listening to Moses Lopai with the song "Why Do You Choose War?" I'm John Tanza in Washington. You have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Salam, salam. The international community, let's talk peace.